listening to Kent Biz Connect, the show that connects businesses in Kent to do business. Tweet us live at Kent_biz.
Well, good afternoon and happy new year, everybody. Welcome to the first Kent Biz Connect radio show of 2020. Thank you so much for joining myself, Martin White, and my fabulous co-presenter today.
Hello there. Hi, it's Tracy.
Tracy, welcome to the studio. Lovely to have you back in.
It's great to be back.
And we've got two superb guests with us today. We've got to my right...
The best ones of the year, aren't we?
To my right, not your left.
Yeah, absolutely.
Introduce yourself, please.
Who, me?
Yes, you.
Oh, hello, I'm Paul.
Paul Andrews. Welcome to the studio, Paul. Jobs in Kent, CEO. And next to you...
Good afternoon. I'm from FSB. It's Alison Palmer here.
Alison Palmer, welcome
Federation
to the studio.
Federation of Small Businesses, I should say, to those that don't yet know.
Thank you so much for coming in. And it feels like we've kind of got a... Feels to me like we've got a kind of a fresh start after all that shenanigans at the end of last year where, you know, we didn't know what we were doing and now we know what we're doing and hopefully we can all kind of move forwards. Is that right?
Oh, most definitely. And like we said earlier when we met up before the show, I just think that, you know, I love the new year because it's where you end up reflecting on the past 12 months, see where you went, see how you're getting on. And then looking forward to the new year and seeing what you can achieve in the next 12 months.
Yeah. If you can't come back in January after Christmas with some kind of renewed impetus and enthusiasm and passion, you're probably doing the wrong thing, aren't you?
I like the feeling too, Martin, of coming into a new decade.
Oh, yeah.
Let's look at a new 10 years. That I find really exciting.
It is, isn't it? Yes.
Yeah. So I think we can achieve more. There's a phrase, I bet you know this one, Paul. People overestimate what they can achieve in 1 year and underestimate what you can achieve in 10.
Absolutely.
And I think that if you kind of bear in mind, you look ahead past the 12 months of the new year resolutions, look at the next 10 years.
Yep.
I think that's really exciting.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Well, it depends how old you are.
Okay, bus pass coming your way. But it gives you a bit more scope. It's a bit more relaxing, but you still, I think you can still be really ambitious.
But also, going back the last decade, where were you 10 years ago? There was a thing over Christmas on Facebook, the 10
people posting images of themselves 10 years ago.
But looking at your life 10 years ago to where you are now, and I'm sure that many people just cannot believe the progress and where they've got today. Even through struggles and strife.
I have to say, though, none of those images that I saw were particularly flattering in the context of this is what you look like 10 years ago. Oh. And this is what
you're
not
my friend on Facebook, are you?
I was trying to find a spoof one for that, but I couldn't find one.
Well, your Business Bunker show's been going for 10 years, hasn't it?
11, yeah.
11 years, so there's plenty of pictures of you.
I did post a picture the other day of me in the studio on the very first show. Yeah. Right. But as you couldn't tell the difference because I've aged so well, it wasn't... there wasn't
like it was yesterday.
Yeah.
It's fair to say that we've all got 10 years older. Let's leave it at that.
Yeah.
But on a serious note, we are here to talk about jobs in Kent today and we're here to talk about the FSB, but I think we're going to kick off by talking about some of the kind of topical Kent business news. Is that right, Tracy?
Yeah, some of the news that's come. And although it's not Kent-based, I want to really start with an article that the BBC came up with a couple of days ago about Saturday jobs dying for teenagers.
Mm.
And I know that when I was younger, my mum and dad used to say to me, well, if you want to buy that, you've got to save for it. Or go and get yourself a job. So I did, and I got myself a Saturday job, although it was a weekend job, and I worked in the evenings, and it gave me such a good foundation of understanding the value of money, if anything else, but also communication skills, which, you know, I used to work in a leisure industry, a swimming pool and gym place, where, you know, I worked in a cafe, so I had to... you know, stop being a bit, you know, shy and start communicating with the customers and the people that used to venture in. And I do find that, you know, communication skills in some areas, I do find it sometimes very troubling that I cannot seem to communicate, sometimes even with my only younger family members because they just don't want to talk or they're interested in something else. But also,
which in a business context, it's going to be a bit of a problem, isn't it?
Exactly. Mm. And I know that, like, when I've worked with these guys on doing the skills 30-30, and it's really interesting to speak to students and see what their communication skills are like, but also find out what their passions outside of playing, you know, games on computers and things. But also, again, it's about money, understanding the value of money. And I had a good conversation on Twitter with somebody and said that, you know, in this day and age, we use cards and phones to tap, and there's no monetary value. It's just numbers, and numbers don't seem to mean anything to people. And I even played Monopoly that gave me a credit card.
Right.
There was no cash. There was no banker. It was just like this machine in the middle of the game. Yeah. And it was like really bizarre.
That was the whole point of Monopoly, wasn't it? To end up with a huge stack of green.
Money.
And if you had a huge stack of pink money.
Wave your wad at people.
That was the whole point.
£500 notes.
So what do we think has happened to the Saturday job people? What's happened to Saturday employment? Is it? I mean, has it gone? Or, what's right?
Yeah, it's gone. You've got to separate the different things that happen here. Most of us, when we the older generation, when we were kids, we did a paper round, a milk round, and maybe worked on a Saturday in a shop.
I had a cleaning job.
Or a cleaning
job,
in
the evenings.
What's happened is health and safety. So a lot of things aren't allowed to be done. You can do a paper round as long as you're over 13 and you're sufficiently insured. So.
But nobody reads papers anymore, so...
But most shops have stopped paper deliveries, because they couldn't get people to do it anymore, because according to the National Federation of News Agents, kids are paid more pocket money than they can afford to pay to deliver the papers, so they don't want to do the work. So there's
so
a double...
So has parental income replaced Saturday job income?
Basically. And but also you've got this whole thing about it's much harder to hire people on low wages like that because you've got minimum wage rules, you've got health and safety rules, and hiring young people is just dodgy.
So does that mean those jobs have disappeared or it's just been restructured
and moved?
So people that are there full-time now do those jobs if they need doing on a Saturday?
What
shift
maybe.
Work?
Well, what you find is that you can't get papers delivered anymore.
Yeah.
Where you can, I was out the other day at my mum's and the paper boy delivered the papers and the paper boy was at least 70.
And he was get them in the morning.
And he was driving around in a car, you know. When I was a kid, I had two paper rounds and a milk round and I doubled them up because I took the papers on the milk float.
That's a really interesting point, actually, because I had a friend who had a great Saturday job when I was at school. He worked in Waitrose.
Yeah.
He had to be interviewed for that job. I mean, you know, it was a serious thing for Waitrose to take you on in their supermarket to work in their store on a Saturday was quite a big thing. He got paid good money. He was given a uniform. It was responsibility.
And the same was with Woolworths. I remember going to an interview in Woolworths and you had to do a maths test.
Yeah, exactly. But my point is this. I walk into Waitrose now on a Saturday and it's a much older generation of people that have filled those that work.
It's retired
space.
People rather than school kids.
Earning additional income to supplement their retirement.
I think as well, kids do quite a lot outside of school, so it might be that they've got some kind of clubs going on or extra tutoring and stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
There's a fair amount of that, which does push into the evenings and the weekends. So that might be a deterrent that the kids are going, well, I haven't got time, I can't fit it in. But I think there's a lot of that as well.
But, you know, funny enough, thinking about it, when I was a kid, I didn't actually really do it for the money either. I was paid £1 a week. It was a long time ago.
It's the old money.
Oh, it was. Yeah, it was. Yes, it was actually. It was pre-decimal. Even when I started work. Proper work. I was my first week's wages at a proper job were £8, 10, and 6. But doing a paper round and a milk round, I wasn't really doing it for the money. I mean, basically, I was I was 13 or so, so I was doing it for fag money, basically. You know, so I could buy 5 Woodbine. But it wasn't really for the money. I was doing it because I wanted a job. Yeah. I wanted to be seen to have a job.
Mm. And also, when I was at school, it was like, oh, you've got a job. Oh, wow, that's fantastic. And especially if you did, like, work in, and we didn't have a Waitrose and Sittingbourne. We're not that posh. But, you know, Woolworths or somewhere like that. If you had something where you got a uniform and you had to take a test and you got the job there, wow, you must be, you know, fantastic.
I think as well, Paul, as you mentioned, our Skills 3030. So it's the workshop where we go, we invite businesses into schools and they meet students directly face to face and we talk about the world of work. Paul, I think I've met quite a few students who have got part-time jobs.
Yeah.
And I've been really pleased and impressed with that.
Yes.
But
yeah.
I think as well, like you said, it's almost kind of the fun of it. You don't get paid that much at that age at all.
Yeah.
The jobs I used to have, a Saturday job, I'd either get all the kind of free baguettes or free croissants or whatever working in the bakers at the end of the day. Fantastic. And I'd get my pay slip, which I'd spend straight away in the record shop down the road. Right. But it was the fun of it as well. And it was that kind of, it's actually more fast paced than school.
You two obviously grew up in very different jobs to me, because I used to clean toilets in the evening. And I didn't do that for any sense of job satisfaction.
But I did it for the money. There's an intellectual disconnect here, Martin.
From one side of the desk to the other.
We had highfalutin aspirational jobs. You were just doing what you were capable of.
No, so it could be for the money.
I represent the mass market, and you guys clearly don't.
Well, I think Paul is right. It's the experience of it, and there's certain. So the students that I've met at Skills 3030 who have got that part time job have got that little spark in their eyes because they know there's something else out there.
Right.
It's not just that school. Safe and close environment of a school and studying. There's an outside world and they're keen to get into it. And I think
we mustn't malign our young people just because things have changed.
No way.
Yeah, and we must be careful of that, because a lot of the people that we talk to are really more than happy to do work experience.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, definitely. And they'll do it for nothing. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, mum and dad look after the money side of their life, but they want to work and they want work experience and they want to do something meaningful. And we get lots and lots of people asked to do work experience. Mm. And so it's not that they don't want to work. No. It's just the nature of everything's changed.
We're not being critical.
Half of the Kent economy is professional services.
Yeah.
You know, do they want to get a Saturday job in an accountancy practice? Maybe not. Yeah. Maybe they do.
But retail jobs are still there. You know, supermarkets still exist. People still go shopping in supermarkets.
But if you look...
And how are they going to get there? Are they all out of town?
Yeah,
if
you actually look at the profile of the employees of an average supermarket, most of them are retired.
Well, that's what we said earlier.
Well, 0 hours contract.
But I'm not sure it's a good thing.
What can we do to improve it?
We've all said how positive it is to have a part-time job when you're growing up.
Yeah, I mean, I think that the positive thing about being put in front of other businesses, like the 30-30 that the FSB do, and actually speaking to students, because when I did one recently for you guys, I was absolutely astounded by a few people that I met there that had already got their business plan in place.
Yeah, yeah.
They're already working. And we're talking about 15, 14-year-olds. Mm. There was one lad and he was refurbishing IT equipment in his bedroom.
Good job.
And I just thought, that is so amazing. Mm. And he knew exactly where he wanted to go. Mm. And I just think that these kids that already have that ability to be enterprising really need to be enhanced.
And sometimes it's that local connection that's needed. So it might be hard getting a job in an Asda store if you don't know the manager or you don't know when they're advertising. But if you, and that's what our Skills 3030 does, is that it makes that real local connection. So you meet somebody face to face. And I know businesses who've, as a result of that, they've said, oh, yeah, I have got Saturday staff out of it, or I have got an internship out of it, because they've met a student who is in walking distance of their business. Mm. So that student is independent. They don't have to have the travel costs or rely on mum or dad or whoever else to get them a lift anywhere. And the business has already met them face to face. So I think that's the key thing. Saturday jobs, yes, there might be less of them, but that's the small business community can definitely do a lot to find those really hyper-local connections and offer that so that the students do know what's out there.
And I think definitely parents who do run a small business are inclined to let their kids work with them during the holidays and things like that. And I think that because they want to teach them what they actually go out to work and do so that they appreciate what actually comes back into that whole household.
Yeah, absolutely.
So in conclusion, the Saturday job it sounds to me like it's gone forever to a large extent.
It's certainly radically changed, yeah.
There's pocket money, there's working practices, there's all sorts of regulatory stuff. Mm. It's a thing of the past. Mm. But getting young people into work at an earlier age is not to be frowned upon.
And their enthusiasm is absolutely there. Yeah. We've met, 1,400 people have taken part, haven't they, in Skills 36?
Absolutely,
so
yeah.
We really can say this with evidence, that the young people have got the energy and they have got the inclination. It's not as you read in all the headlines. Mm.
Yeah.
For me, the biggest issue that we face is that we need young people to get experience of what the world of work is really about. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because the theory doesn't match the practice. And when we talk to young people about the world of work, of course they have no experience and they don't understand it's an evolutionary process. Mm. You know, if you say go and work at Tesco's, they immediately think of stacking shelves or working on a checkout. They don't think of all the other things that happen at Tesco's, like HR, finance, logistics, IT, mm-hmm. and all the other things that you would do in a big retail operation.
Or even the simple things of getting to work on time, turning up, smiling, saying hello, being in the right place. It's all of, you almost have to learn to have a job.
Yeah.
And it's that transitory
but
element.
Even the scenarios you've just described. Stacking a shelf. Well, you know, what a great insight into, well, actually, you know, isn't this badly designed? Because I can't reach it, how does someone shorter than me reach up there and pull that product out?
And that's the whole point.
Working on a checkout, customer service.
Exactly.
What's wrong with that?
But shelf stacking is an art in itself. You know, merchandising is a big art in itself. So you're absolutely right. It's about getting those experiences and understanding how work unfolds. My other big problem is that politicians some years ago decided that everybody ought to have a qualification. Yeah. And I think that is the biggest mistake they've ever made, especially for teenage boys. Yeah, you've got far too many kids being forced to stay at school until they're 17 and 18. Mm-hmm. The teachers have to cope with what is a grown man, mm-hmm. yeah, with testosterone coursing through their bodies and an attitude problem, yeah, because they don't want to be there. And academically, they're not suited to what they're doing. Mm-hmm. Now, back in my day, we were all kicked out of school and we got apprenticeships or we worked somewhere else, and we were taken into the workforce as children and then moulded into the workforce as men. Yeah. And I think that made a huge difference because it took away that antagonism that you find in school and put it in front of a bunch of, in my case, I worked in a factory, and you put it in front of a bunch of blokes that, you know, wouldn't take any truck with any of that. It's, listen, boy, you do what you're told and you do it now. Yeah. And you did, otherwise you're in trouble. And I think we've missed that for a large percentage of people who are not suited to academic study.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and there's definitely that, because you do have two different sides of people. Mm. And there was that program where Undercover Teacher.
Yeah.
Where somebody who'd run their own business actually looked at the students and took the ones that were troublemakers and drilled down into what their psyche was and where they wanted to go and what their ambition was.
Yeah.
And through that, they found that they were so entrepreneurial. They had, their mindset was completely different from being academic.
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
This is what needs to you know, we need to shine with these people.
Right, let's draw the line under that.
Oh no, hold on. Footnote. It may be that we have to merge those two worlds with the new T levels.
Yeah.
Because small businesses are going to have to give 45 days of work experience so that these students can get their T level qualification. Mm. So we can't moan about it. We've got to adapt. We've also equally got to be attractive to those young people. Because if your business isn't interesting to work in, they'll go somewhere else.
Mm. Yeah.
And we want their talent.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Now you can draw a line under it.
Brilliant. Right. Thank you.
Okay. Well, You pick the next subject, Martin.
Well, no, you tell me, what else is on your hit list?
On my hit list, I know you were mentioning about the development in Sittingbourne.
Oh yes, Sittingbourne. Let's talk about Sittingbourne, because you're a local Sittingbourne person.
I am, and we were talking about the new Travelodge that's going to be opening in February, And the plan for this was around many moons ago when I was at secondary school. Wow, about taken, having things like bowling
alleys.
It's
taken a couple of weeks then.
Yeah, it's taken a few months. And now it is after the chaos of the roads and everything else that's happened in Sittingbourne. The hotel, the Travel Lodge, will be opening in February.
Whereabouts?
It's literally opposite the railway station. So you come out of the railway station, right in the centre. Mm-hmm. It's hoping to open on the 17th of February. So that'll be interesting. We've got some restaurant chains like Nando's and Pizza Express and Creams.
Cinema going in, is there? Right.
Exactly.
A huge car park.
There's a huge car park, and that has been that's caused quite a controversy in the area. Mm. But now the council decided to reduce the rates of the parking there.
Yes, £7 all day from all 15, day. I think.
So. Exactly.
After my journey across Kent today, I feel a bit like Greta Thunberg. Mm. We need to move away from cars. We need to think differently, think outside the box. I want a jetpack that's carbon neutral. We need to move away from cars. Yeah. It doesn't work.
Well, that's why they've put it right next to the train station.
Train station.
Oh, good.
So exactly, people can get there on the train.
Okay.
but also another thing is that we talk about this cinema.
Yes.
Now, there is our old cinema in Sittingbourne, which has been run by a small business, and it's taken a long time to get it developed, to get the seating all done and all nice and plush and the heating in. Mm. And yes, you know, they make their own popcorn and it's really cheap. And to go and see a movie, it's a fiver, you know. And now we're going to have this big corporate company at the other end of town with a multiplex cinema. And part of me is thinking, do you know what? I think I'd rather go to my own cinema.
Yeah, right. Well, continue to do that.
And sometimes
with your feet.
Competition can help. It might bring more footfall. It could do they both succeed. That can happen.
I mean, we've got exactly the same thing in Thanet with an F, where I live.
We've got a
huge view multi-complex up at Westwood Cross, which caters for people that want to spend £20 going to the cinema and have that kind of, you know, that latest kind of cinema goer experience. But we've also got a wonderful family-run cinema in Westgate-on-Sea, which provides a fabulous service as well, but a much more personal individual touch, and actually at a quarter of the price. So. Mm. And that's just as full as the view is at Westwood Cross.
It's interesting. I live in Tenterton, which is the upmarket part of Ashford. Ashford has a huge cinema complex, and they're just about to build a second one.
Yeah.
In Hawkhurst, which is the village the other side of us, they have a Kino, a little Kino digital cinema.
Yes.
It only seats like 40 people, and that is one of the most popular things. And it's so popular, they want to open one in Tenterton. And it's popular because of exactly what Martin said. It's a different market that you're catering for. It's an intimate market.
Yes.
Yeah. And you can go to a big multiplex and wander around there, and the kids can throw popcorn all over the place. Mm. Or you can go and watch a romantic film with your other half, or you can take the kids to a Kino as well. Yeah. But it's a much more intimate experience.
Yeah.
And there's room for both.
Oh, and
there's room for both.
And I agree with that. And especially like with, if you've got a load of kids, like my neighbours took her kids, she's got three kids, and they went to see Jumanji yesterday. And she said, I'd rather go there because A, they like the sweets, it's cheap. And plus, we can all go and we can all go and see the same film together.
Yeah. Is it a German company?
What?
Kino.
No, it's a husband and wife that owned the schoolhouse in Hawkhurst, and they decided to start a business, and they just put a digital screen in there
and called it Kino.
And they called it Kino
because you know what Kino is in German.
No, go on.
Cinema.
Oh, is it? Well, that's probably where they got it from.
K I N O.
Yeah,
yeah,
right, there you are.
Yeah,
German word for cinema.
They obviously went on holiday to Germany and thought, we will appropriate
there
that.
There must be a connection. Next time you're in there, ask them.
Yeah, I will.
Anyway,
do.
The positive thing about that is there's £57 million of investment gone into Sittingbourne to bring all of these projects to life.
Yes.
Which is fabulous, isn't it?
It's a long time.
Because Sittingbourne needs
coming.
It.
Yes.
It does need regeneration,
And to be fair, with the infrastructure, I mean, there's been arguments about the A249 and everything else and what they're going to do to eradicate all the queuing traffic and everything. It is a real good positive step. And I would really like to see my local high street encapsulate smaller businesses as well, because there have been some units that have been empty for a while. And to see smaller businesses come together as a cooperative maybe and utilise the space in the high street to just give it a real nice sort of like...
Well, as Sittingbourne, from a business point of view, has a different demographic from a lot of other places, because it's a big logistics centre.
Yes, it is.
You know, up on, what is it, St George's Park or whatever it is. You've got a massive logistic companies there, which is great because there's a lot of employment in Sittingbourne, but it's of that particular kind.
Yes.
Funnily enough, I've been involved, I'm not so much now, but at the early days, with the Dockyard Church on Sheerness and regenerating that. That's been a bit of a project as well. But when that comes on stream, that's going to be a really nice addition for the island. But again, bringing all these things together and touching on something that Alison just said about public transport, one of the problems we do have is a lack of public transport. And I don't mean trains, and I certainly don't mean high speed two and stuff like that. We need buses, and we need local buses. In a semi-rural place, even like Kent, there is not enough buses for young people to get to work, all kinds of people to get to work.
The interesting thing about Sittingbourne is, you know, you've got the Eurolink Business Park, you've got the Kent Science Park there. I think you've got the employers and you've got the businesses, but Sittingbourne has never been an aspirational place to live. And hopefully, you know, that's the kind of imbalance that needs to be redressed. And with things like this, hopefully, that's the start.
And the thing is, there's a lot of investment did go into Faversham, because Faversham's a spectacular place under swell. And it's got some really nice shops, really quirky shops, really not, you know, and it's got a nice market. And, you know, we're trying to generate a really good market in Sittingbourne as well, as well as on the island. So I think we're going to get there, but it's going to take a bit longer because we have been sort of left behind.
And I think it's only the town centre that suffers from that as well. Because if you look, you know, at Tunstall and places like this, and lovely villages clustered around Sittingbourne. You know, it's the town centre, the high street area just got tired and faded and run down, and it's not been regenerated.
And when the rents and the rates are so high, it does put off those smaller businesses.
But it needs a focal point, and something like this, I think, could be that focal point.
I'm hoping so.
I mean, look at Thanet. You know, we've had Westward Cross. That's become a huge focal point. We've got the harbour in Ramsgate, you know, with the lights at Christmas time and everything. That's become a huge focal point for new business and regeneration. So, you know, hopefully this is just the start of the process for Sittingbourne as well, because nobody likes to see anywhere that's kind of, you know, down on its luck.
And to be honest, we have got some really little, nice, fantastic bars and stuff
there
like
you go. We just need to shout about it a bit
more. Exactly.
We need to move on, guys. We could talk about what's going on in Kent all day long, because there's so much exciting stuff happening. What we're going to do now is play a little bit of music by way of an introduction to our first guest. We'll let you guess the connection if you can. It's slightly tenuous this week. It's a bit of an 80s week this week, which is all down to me. But we will see you on the other side of this.
You're listening to Kent Biz Connect. Tweet us live at Kent_biz.
talk
well,
next time.
Welcome back, everybody, to Kent Biz Connect. And for the 80s children amongst you...
None of us here, surely.
or growing up in the 80s, not necessarily born in the 80s. that was Aztec Camera. And it was a slightly tenuous link, working in a gold mine. And the, I guess the kind of the only connection there really was the kind of the word working.
Yeah, because there's certainly no gold mine implications, right?
and that really is our cue to welcome the larger-than-life Paul Andrews.
Steady.
Into the Kent Biz Connect studio. Paul Andrews wears lots of different hats, but today we're going to talk about jobs in Kent, Paul.
Cool. Hello.
If we can. Hello. Welcome to the studio.
It's, thank you. It must be lovely in here.
It's slightly unusual for you to be sitting on that side of the desk.
It is, yeah. I keep wanting to run around and twiddle some buttons. I go, come on, Martin, get your act together, mate.
And sit on me.
Yeah.
But you're not going to be doing that today.
Sure.
But what you are going to be doing is telling us all about the Jobs in Kent journey, because am I right in thinking you're in your 19th or 20th year?
20th year last year. We launched the first Jobs in Kent live site in November 99.
Right. So for the uninitiated, tell us, what is jobsinkent.com?
It's a recruitment portal where we advertise jobs on behalf of employers and employment agencies, as and we'll advertise any job as long as it's in Kent, Medway, or the London boroughs that were formerly Kent. So okay. Bromley, Bexley, Orpington.
I always find that very confusing.
Greenwich and Lewisham and Peckham.
Right.
And when we... when we chose those boroughs, we weren't really sure, but they are actually very busy for us.
Right.
And a lot of the people that live there still consider themselves to be part of the Kent market rather than London market.
Brilliant. Yeah. So let's backtrack 20 years.
Yep.
Because 20 years ago, I would imagine most job advertising was done through newspapers.
Newspapers, yeah. Yeah.
Right. So what on earth made you think there was an opportunity? Because, I mean, 20 years ago, what sort of state was the WWW, the World Wide Web?
Oh, no, it was almost non-existent.
Then. Non-existent. Yeah, I think email was probably the kind of...
I was having a discussion about this the other day. One of the first things that came out was a thing called CompuServe. And CompuServe came out in the late 80s, early 90s, and it was an online system, but it didn't use the internet. It was a dial-up. You had to dial CompuServe, and in the UK, their offices were in Bristol. So you dialed up at 1,200 bits per second into a dial-up in Bristol, okay? And that was the case, and there were one or two, America Online, and a couple of others came along before the internet
broke. The free CD that you could load in?
Every magazine had a free CD to get you loaded up on CompuServe.
And that was their way of launching the internet, wasn't it?
You got an email address as well. Mm-hmm. An email was big. Most people signed up to CompuServe for the email. Mm-hmm. What happened is when you went into CompuServe, it was just an online shop. And they had people. I can't remember who it was. There were two or three shops that signed up to it, and you could buy things online. But you were basically very restrictive to what you could do. And they had a new service, but it was all internal. You didn't go anywhere. It was all provided by CompuServe. At the time, I was a director of an IT consulting company, and we basically placed contractors. In the marketplace. And the way that you attracted contractors or indeed job changers was an advertisement in the press. Mm-hmm. And for us as an IT agency, that was the trade press.
Okay.
And there were two trade press magazines at the time, which was Computer Weekly and Computing. And a full-page advert in Computer Weekly in 1995 was £45,000 for 1 week.
My God.
Wow.
Wow.
Yeah. That was for a full page.
Yeah.
If you wanted an advert in the Sunday Times, and the Sunday Times was one of the premium places for advertising executive jobs, you were looking at a minimum of about $8,000 for a 1 week advert.
Because thinking back to my early job seeking days, that's where I used to look at job ads, you know, in newspapers like the Times. And I remember thinking, these are all way beyond me.
Yeah.
These are all £40,000-£50,000 a year jobs. And I'm starting out as a new person. Where do I go to find a job?
Yeah. So that was the market at the time. If you were looking for a job like a lorry driver or a bookkeeper or a secretary or something like that, you looked in the local paper. And as far as Kent was concerned, that would have been the Kent Messenger.
Yeah.
What most people don't realise is that local papers made almost their entire income from job advertising. Mm.
Yes.
Basically, there are three things that they advertise in the papers: jobs, cars and houses. Mm-hmm. And in that order, their income was jobs, houses and cars. Mm. That's where the entire income of a local newspaper was actually generated.
So everything was press.
Yeah, everything was print. Mm-hmm. It was done on a weekly basis, so a job ad would come out. Mm-hmm. In terms of the paper, the paper was come out on a Friday. You'd get the first copy and you'd try to ring before everybody else did.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah. Yeah, so it was a race to get your CV in to an employer before everybody else did it.
And that would have been a manually written a typewritten CV in those days.
In a post.
On a typewriter.
Letter. With a letter and a stamp on it.
Yes. Yep. Gosh, yeah, I do remember that.
Mm. And that's how it worked.
Mm. So fast forward a little bit.
So what happened? So I'll try and do this as quickly as possible, but there's a lot of evolution that happened here. A chap called Robbie Cowlin, who I actually knew because he'd done some work for us. He was a programmer. He launched a thing called Fax Me It. Okay? Mm-hmm. It was a play on words, Fax Me IT. What he did was he started putting together lists of IT consulting vacancies, contractor vacancies, and he sent out a weekly fax to people that signed up for it.
Right.
He then got a deal.
At their place of work?
Yeah, or if you had a fax machine at home. Mm. Yeah. So he just faxed through the list. Yeah. But they're contractors, so, you know, they get a fax for their next job. He then took it online as part of CompuServe as a forum. And there was also a forum called Kix, C-I-X. And basically, you could log into it and go, I've heard that, you know, Smiths are looking for a network controller, or Smiths are looking for a programmer with COBOL experience and a phone number and address.
So this was an online forum?
It was an online forum.
This is early internet.
Yeah, yeah. They were known as bulletin boards back then.
Yes.
And what it was, CompuServe operated a bulletin board, and he had one of the bulletin boards, which was IT jobs, yeah?
Yeah.
But you had to have a CompuServe address, you had to be a CompuServe member, and you had to want to go and do it. It was minimalist. And then, anyway, Robbie then launched a thing called JobServe, which, as far as I can ascertain, was the world's very first internet job portal.
Wow.
Yeah. And it was IT jobs only. Mm-hmm. And if you think about it, back then, anybody that didn't work in IT wouldn't have known how to use any of this stuff anyway. So it was only IT people, but it was relevant to them. As a company that specialised in that, we recognised very soon that it would have a major impact on our business.
So you were already in the recruitment industry, in the IT sector?
Yeah.
Right.
So basically,
we're doing it the old-fashioned way.
Yeah, but we were doing IT contractors, so we were doing consultancy assignments. Yeah. But then we were paying something like £200,000 to £300,000 a year in advertising in the media.
Yeah.
And when Robbie launched JobServe, we brought our advertising spend down to £15,000.
Wow.
Right. And doubled the amount of people we got.
Wow.
Okay. So I'm sitting there thinking, there's a market there for that. But I wasn't the only one.
Yeah.
Lots of other people started seeing the potential of this as the internet came online. And they started launching job boards. Mm-hmm. And one of the very first was a company called Stepstone. And they launched a job board. They spent £50 million launching a job board. Okay. Wow. And I saw what they did, and I thought they got it wrong. Mm. Mm. They launched a global job board, which was great if you were some highfalutin lawyer or whatever. Mm. If you're a secretary or a van driver or a car mechanic...
In Sittingbourne,
why would you look on a site and find a job in Perth or Lagos in Nigeria or Boston?
Yeah.
And I thought, the vast majority of people want to work within 10 or 15 miles of where they live.
Yeah.
Yeah. And well, the way that most people find their jobs is by looking in the local paper. So why don't we launch a local site and hence Jobs in Kent. And that's why we decided to launch that way rather than a national site like the first national sites were things like Monster. And Hot Jobs and stuff like that and Total Jobs. All great sites, but, you know, big, national, and you get lost in there. And we definitely went for the local marketplace as I thought that was where I could compete. I didn't have deep pockets. I didn't have 50 million quid to spend on a launch. So we went for the local market.
So you were already running a business. So did you start Jobs in Kent alongside that business, or did something else happen in between in your personal life?
A bit of both, really. I came up with it. I was never a recruiter. I was an IT guy, and I used to do IT projects. My now darling ex-wife was the recruiter,
right?
And we were in business together, and she's a very good recruiter and brilliant at what she does. And she specialises in IT in the city.
Yeah.
And I worked as an IT consultant in the city. So we brought those two things together in the business. She did all the work, but I did all the technical stuff.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
And we just had contractors that worked for us on projects. Around that time, sadly, our marriage came to an end. And we had to split things up. And we did that very amicably. She got everything. Sorry. but, you know, that was fair. I have no problems with what happened. She made me redundant, okay? And I used my redundancy money to basically launch Jobs in Kent.
Right. So you got a developer on board or developers, or how did it come about? Where do you go to it when something's that new?
Yeah.
How do you find the right people to partner
with? Well, again, it was interesting. Before Jobs in Kent, the internet was starting to come about. And because we were in IT, we worked out very early on that our business needed a website. And in those days, there were no web companies to go to. You just had to know someone that, you know, so most people did it themselves or tried to do it themselves.
I mean, were they called websites back then?
Not a lot,
What were they called?
Well,
portals?
Yeah,
or
thingies.
Thingies, they weren't really called websites, were they?
You asked Jeeves.
Where's he gone?
Interestingly enough, I was sat in the office talking about it, and my landlord, the guy that owned the office, came in. And we were just chatting about stuff, and I said, I'm looking to do a website, and I'm messing about with it at the moment. And he said, my brother's son is a web guy. He's at university at the moment doing astrophysics, but he makes websites. Went, right, okay. What's his name? Gavin. I went, does he want a job? I don't know. Anyway, cut a long story short, Gavin came to see me, and I said, do you want a job doing our website? And he went, yeah, but I don't want to kind of just do that. I want a job. So I hired him for our company, and he built a company website.
Right.
When I came up with the idea of Jobs in Kent, I said to Gavin, could you make a website to do this? So Gavin wrote the very first Jobs in Kent site. Just for what it's worth, Gavin is now the head of DNS operations at Nominet, and he's one of the leading people in the whole internet world in the UK, and he's a...
So this is the global registrar for domain names.
He wrote the very first website. When it all moved apart and I formed a new company, Jobs in Kent, to start off with, Gavin got headhunted and went to work. First, he went to work for an ISP, and then he ended up working at Nominet. And... I had to find another web guy. So I did the same as I did the time before. I just asked around people I knew if they knew anyone that's, that was doing websites. And they came across a lad called Anthony Theodoru, Egg for short. And Egg was doing a PCGE at university to become a teacher. And he passed all of his exams, went into a classroom and found that he didn't like kids. Sorry, Egg. And didn't enjoy the teaching experience. So I gave him a job as a... He'd been doing some websites for himself. So I gave him a job doing websites for us. And he worked for us for 17 years.
Wow.
And he recently moved on to do something else.
Gosh.
So
but
he,
at this point,
yeah.
you haven't got a business.
No, no.
You've just got expenditure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So how are you financing this?
Yeah. Well, what the problem is with something like that is it's an advertising portal. Mm. There are adverts and people that apply to the adverts, and we didn't have either. Yeah. So how do you get an advert if there's no one looking? And how do you get people to look if there's no adverts?
Mm, yeah.
So you have to start off in a hybrid way. So when we launched, we did everything for free. Yeah. If you put your ads on, we'll get people to look at it. Mm. And even then, people go, nah, I'm not going to do that. Mm. So what we did was what became known as scraping. Yeah. Mm. So you go into an agency website and take their jobs off their website. Or out of the papers more than anything, because most of them didn't have websites. You get their job in the paper
yeah.
and put it on the site. Yeah.
And without then, them knowing? Without the recruiter knowing?
No. Quite often we'd ring them up and say, look, do you want to put this on for free? And they go, no. And we'll go, we'll do all the work. And they go, whatever.
Yeah.
So we just do it. They ignored us completely, but we did tell them. Normally, sometimes, mostly.
It's different times.
Could be a good way to build relationships.
Yeah, it still happens now. Huge companies. Indeed, I won't even name them.
You might have missed that.
Spend a lot of their time scraping jobs. That's how they started. Mm. Yeah.
So you would post these ads.
Yeah.
And then, I mean, what was the consumer access to the internet at that point, though?
Incredibly low.
Right.
Incredibly low.
So to get people looking at them is kind of.
And you had the whole marketing thing. What I did to start our first marketing efforts is I got sheets of A4 paper and I just printed on there in big capital letters, are you looking for a local job? www.jobsinkent.com. We're online.
Jobsinkent.com.
Yeah. And I just went around every house in the state I could find.
Right.
And looked at houses.
Door dropped.
That at least had telephones. Mm. Yeah. Mm.
And they might have a connection.
And looked reasonably affluent. Mm. And I put one through a letterbox. Mm.
Gosh.
And we delivered thousands of those.
It's amazing this ever got off the ground, frankly, isn't
well,
it? I mean,
well,
you know, you had an idea that was kind of way ahead of its time in terms of the technology to support it.
Yeah.
You kind of reverse engineered it.
That was the big problem. When we rang employers and said, do you want to advertise with us? And they go, yeah. When's your paper come out? And we go, it's online. And they go, what?
What's
it's on
that?
The internet. The inter what? Yeah. And people go, nah, that'll never work.
Yeah.
And I was told that so many thousands of times.
Isn't that something the CIA operate, you know, covertly?
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I remember being introduced to the internet where I was at university by two guys that were actually doing computer technology. And I went, well, what is this? And they took me down to the library at the university and showed me. And I went, oh, my God, this is scary.
I remember intranets were almost more common than internets.
But if you think, we don't think about this too often.
Mm.
But if you think about that time, you know, the 90s, which is when the internet became live, there's lots of stats about this, about the rise of things. You know, like it took radio 30 years to get to 1 million listeners. Mm-hmm. It took TV 30 years to get to 50 million users. Mm-hmm. It took Facebook 18 months to get to 50 billion users, you know, that kind of stupidity. Yeah. The internet itself was very much like that in the early days. It took off very, very quickly because a number of things all came together at once to make it viable. The internet was there. We then, the telecoms companies introduced ADSL, which made a huge difference because then you weren't restricted to dialing up. Yeah.
Oh, do you remember that?
Well, you had,
get off the phone, I'm on the internet.
You had ISPs,
yeah.
internet service providers, came out of nowhere, didn't
they? Yeah, exactly. So it all suddenly grew because the web itself had so much content on it, even in the early days, that people were drawn to it.
Mm.
But even so, we were charging £25 for an advert then, and I made my first £25 4 years after we launched.
Wow.
That's dedication.
So, I mean, that's a really good point. So, what within those, you know, what kept you going for 4 years?
I had a job.
Right.
Which so many small businesses do. We hear that so much.
So I was working alongside a speaker.
I used my redundancy money to pay the other guys that were. I had a sales guy, Pete, that worked for me, who still does, and Egg, who was the web guy. Mm-hmm. And I used my redundancy money to pay their wages. Mm. And then I was working around it. And I worked, fortunately, what I was doing was the kind of work where I got paid quite a lot of money in small hits.
Yeah.
So I was doing a lot of public speaking and stuff. Mm-hmm. So I'd be out for a couple of days, but I'd earn like a month's wages doing a couple of talks or doing a couple of consultancy assignments. Mm-hmm. So I wasn't going to work, you know, like 8 hours a day. Mm-hmm. And then I was working in the evenings as well.
Mm-hmm. And then you could spend the rest of the time working on the
and
new
then
business.
Spend the rest of the time with the mm-hmm. with the guys working on the business.
So how much do you think those first 4 years cost you in terms of investment?
Have you
ever looked at it on that level?
No, not really. Right. Because it was a bit of a funny way to launch. Mm. Yeah, because I'd had another business before and we kind of broke it up. And to be fair, you know, some of the costs were paid already, you know, so the formation costs were paid before I broke up. I stayed in the office that we were in. Mm. And Chris moved her business out, but they kind of paid the rent for a year anyway.
Yeah.
And stuff like that. So
it wasn't as much as it might have been, but nevertheless, you've spent 4 years starting and trying to build a business with no or little success.
Yeah, absolutely. But again, you got to also look at the fact that the business isn't called Jobs in Kent. A business is JRK Software. And we did other things, or I did other things because I didn't know if it would ever work. Mm. So it was only one strand of what I was trying to do to build a business.
Yeah. Right.
But what happened is once it eventually hit a tipping point, I gave up everything else and went, we're going to make some money out of this now.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Whereas before I was doing training courses. I did management training.
Yes.
I did public speaking. Mm-hmm. I did management consultancy assignments and stuff. Like I did I did the year 2K consultancy assignment for the House of Commons. Mm-hmm.
but the fact is you were employed and then using that money to fund a business that it took 4 years to get off the ground, which is – you know,
it's dedication.
Well, I mean, I think what the key thing there is it puts it into perspective, doesn't it, for any kind of prospective business, new business owner or startup out there today that, you know, there isn't a kind of an on-off switch.
No,
in
there
business.
Isn't. And
there isn't a magic wand.
I want to press this point because when you look backwards at something, it seems obvious. Mm-hmm. But when you look forwards, it isn't.
Yeah.
And there's lots of points in that first 4 years when we thought this is ridiculous. Mm. Yeah. The only reason we kept going was because we had the site there and it wasn't an onerous thing to put some jobs on it. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But we would do, our options were open. Mm. Yeah. Mm. I'm doing this. Mm-hmm. You guys are doing, I'm saying to Egg, we need to think of a different website that can earn money in a different way. Come up with some ideas. Mm. We were looking at starting a business. Mm. We did not know which strand of that business would work. Mm. We were just going at stuff.
Right, exactly. Yeah? Mm.
And then eventually we got to a point where for all kinds of reasons, people started paying to advertise. Mm. And once they did that, the whole thing hit a tipping point very quickly.
Mm-hmm.
Because we started getting word of mouth testimonials, you know, people going, wow, you know, I put a job on there. It was only 25 quid. I used to advertise in the paper for 500 quid and I got 50 CVs. Mm-hmm. And once you started getting that, it was a much easier sell.
Yeah.
It still wasn't a doddle because there were still so many people out there that didn't get the internet, or wanted to argue. They go, I looked all through the paper and my job wasn't there.
Mm-hmm.
It's not in the papers. Mm-hmm. It's here. Mm. Yeah.
Well, what we're going to have to do is come back and do part two.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Go for it.
In a few weeks' time because that's fascinating.
Yeah.
And I think I want to get into more, you know, we've talked very much about the kind of the challenges of a startup business, but I want to talk about the challenges of scaling a business up.
Yep.
And you know, and being in business for the long term, and, and how you do that as well.
So
we're going to have to do this in two parts, otherwise we won't get a chance to talk to the lovely Alison.
that is a really nice way of saying shut up.
we did say don't talk too much.
Well, I haven't yet.
Summarised in 20 years.
But I think for me the key thing about this is you know, as a business owner, you know, you meet lots of experts in the marketplace who will tell you how to run your business, but they never actually run a business themselves in the same way that you've just described.
Yeah.
And it isn't until you go through that process and you understand it that you actually then see the value in talking to somebody like you that's been there and done it for real.
There is no panacea. In starting and running a business. There is no guarantees that the cleverest business in the world can fail and the stupidest business in the world can succeed.
Yeah.
It comes down to perseverance, hard work, and lots of luck.
Yeah. Yeah. And ignorance. Sometimes.
Oh, I've got loads of that.
Oh, no, I've just written some notes. I think I it's seizing opportunities. That was fascinating. No, I think it reminds me of lots of other businesses that I hear about who, if you stick at it and keep going and you're flexible and you're looking for opportunities, thinking, well, it might work, and you're just... it's actually being quite optimistic, isn't it? You're always looking, what could work? Dump that, try that, less of that, more of that. If you're always flexible...
I'm very ranty about this. Mm. I'm anti-goal. I'd never set a goal in my life.
Okay.
What I have is a system of travel. And basically, I have a very loose system of travel because I think flexibility is the key.
Yeah.
If you over focus on a goal, you miss opportunities either side of that.
Definitely. Yeah.
But also, how demoralising is it to continually set goals and not hit any of them?
Exactly.
I mean, if you'd set yourself goals every quarter for 4 years and didn't hit any of them,
I would have stopped.
You'd have gone and hung yourself, wouldn't you? I mean, it's just nonsense.
Yeah. I might still do that. Yeah.
No, please don't.
So big picture is your approach.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly.
And how I get there, how it's I meander my way there.
You duck and dive and you bob and weave on the way there.
Tracy, please make a note.
Part two, we'll
get Paul back shortly to give us part two for Jobs in Kent. But for now, Paul, fascinating as always. Thank you so much for coming on the show. We're going to play a very quick bit of tunage.
To
introduce our next guest.
We're all sitting here in anticipation of where it's going to be.
Nobody will have any idea why we've chosen this particular song apart from me, so I might have some explaining to do on the other side of this. Well, we're back again. Thank you for staying with us on the Kent Biz Connect radio show today. The politics of dancing, or should it be the dancing of politics? I'm not quite sure.
I think both work.
What way round that should be? But again, it's another classic 80s tune, and a fitting introduction to our next guest, Alison Palmer,
who isn't 80.
Who? No, absolutely not. That's more me and Paul. But Alison, you are the Kent, and actually, I think your title is Regional Development Manager for the FSB. Is that right?
My boss might not quite agree with that. Technically, I'm a Development Manager for Kent and Medway,
right.
Federation of Small Businesses.
For the FSB.
What that actually means is...
She runs everything.
No, I think it means more stakeholder relationship management. I think okay. that's my kind of mm-hmm. job.
Engagement.
Like representative. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Face
lots
off.
Of listening to mm-hmm. what the members are saying and doing and are up to and what their concerns are and what their successes are, which
right.
I think are equally important. And then trying to tie that all together, looking at what head office are up to, looking at what our national MPs and our local MPs are saying and doing, and joining all those conversations together.
So that's
it's
where
a short job title, isn't
that's
it?
That's where the politics
put that
comes
on an email
in.
Footer.
That's where the link from the politics of dancing comes in, because at its core, the FSB is a political lobbying organisation. Is that correct?
And that's why it was set up 45 years ago, mm-hmm. To be the voice of small business. There you go. That's
in
what it's
Parliament.
All about. Yes. Mm-hmm. So it was Captain Norman Small in 70 something or other. And he was, I think he was like a travelling salesman. That's what you would call it nowadays. So he was going around the UK meeting so many independent traders and small businesses. And it was just when, and this will all ring a bell to you, the government was about to increase national insurance contributions. And so many of the people he was meeting, mm-hmm. whether it's friends or colleagues or clients, were saying, oh, this is really going to impact on our overheads. So he went, well we need to do something about it. And there mm-hmm. wasn't anything similar to that mm-hmm. at that time. Mm-hmm. He was specifically, literally collecting all those voices together and saying to government, this will be the effect if you do right. that. Mm-hmm. And 45 years later, we're still talking about it.
It's still got the same problem because government are a bit
We've
slow on the
some
uptake.
Wins, but yeah. what
it's
it means is you don't feel
that.
So individual. Yeah.
yeah.
yeah. It's still a big issue. And it means that you when you look at the news and all the big headlines, it's Land Rover are doing this and yeah. you know, Boots are going to be doing that and Asda are changing this shape of the high street, da da da. In Kent, 97.2% of the businesses yeah. are small businesses. Right. So without that collective overall umbrella, which is us, mm-hmm. it means it's really hard for government to get that steer on what on earth is yeah. happening in the small business yeah. economy. So that's where...
Because we are half of the UK economy. Small
absolutely.
Businesses are half of the
5.
UK economy.
5.8 million.
61%.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And we employ so many within the private sector as well. So mm-hmm. what we do is we speak to our members nationwide mm-hmm. regularly. We have surveys and reports and all kinds of information and data. And we take that to government on a weekly basis.
Right. And
so
I think,
they really do understand what is the temperature
yeah,
like.
And I think that's really imperative because small businesses out there do sometimes, you know, some of them are on their own and don't know where to go and don't know who to speak to. And I
or
think having
don't know
a collective
that someone's sticking up for them. And this
exactly.
is where I know some businesses say, oh, no, because it's not my sector or it's not my trade. And we do cover all small businesses. Mm-hmm. We are in every single sector. There's a member. It could be a dog groomer. It could be an accountancy firm. It could be mm-hmm. a legal practice. It could be a specialist cybersecurity. We can represent all of them. Mm-hmm. And it is very much that bulk of the economy that mm-hmm. we're talking about. So mm-hmm. some businesses will say, oh, no, you know, I'm in the fishing industry. Mm. That's fine, but you're, we can still represent that big
yes.
argument.
Well, it comes back to this what we said earlier, you know, the word voice.
Mm.
You know, you are the voice of small businesses in the UK.
And we've got a seat at the table at some really super
yeah.
important
yeah.
Board meetings, mm. national government. I mean, seriously, we meet the business secretary and we've met the prime minister, the new
yeah.
one, remember him? On a regular basis, because we can talk about our members, about 180,000 in the UK, mm-hmm. and that is a taste of those 5.8 yeah. million businesses.
Well, you facilitate a Bank of England roundtable, I know, on a quarterly basis
yes,
in Kent as well.
We
so
do.
The Bank of England come to Kent.
They want to hear
to
directly.
Meet
yeah.
small business owners to get a barometer on what's going on in the small business economy.
Absolutely.
And you facilitate that as well.
And another point and something that I really do like about FSB, we're not for profit and we're membership led. So if our 5,000 odd businesses in Kent went, well, for heaven's sake, we really need to focus on this. That is what I do and that is what I facilitate. Mm-hmm. So if you look at our activity, it is driven by what the membership say in Kent. Mm-hmm. It's driven by the skills need and lack of, hence our workshops and bringing that together on a face-to-face basis. It's about the infrastructure in the broadband. It's about business rates, because that's what the majority of members are saying.
And what better way to do that than the Kent Business Summit, which is happening
this Friday
at the Kent Business School. So tell us a little bit more about that. What's the agenda there? Is that, again, an opportunity for businesses to be involved in shaping direction and decision-making?
Come and listen and learn. Come and discuss, be informed and collaborate. That's our little strap line this year. So this is the third year, and this is very much run Kent. The University of Kent have been fantastic in offering the space and in driving this forward. It's literally 97% them. And we have to say, brilliant job to Fluorte, who's unfortunately moving on to another role.
She is, producing
we'll
Kent.
Maybe we'll just go and work with her there. But she's done an absolutely brilliant job in driving this, because the University of Kent recognised we needed this kind of forum, an open space, almost like it's an open business summit where you should be meeting those key decision makers, those local government representatives, those people who get that tranche of budget and then have to decide where it's spent. Mm-hmm. And it's fine us, because FSB have got places on about 15 different boards around Kent. So a member might represent us on an international business board or the Kent Business Advisory Board or the Kent and Medway Economic Partnership. But that's well and good behind the scenes. What is there out there that's visible that you can kind of go, oh, crikey, there's 400 people in a room and they're all talking about what on earth we can do to make Kent better. That I feel that that's a bit stronger and more powerful.
And it's structured, isn't it?
In a different way to the behind-the-scenes board.
You know, there are breakout groups on the day if you're interested in, I think on the agenda this year is sustainability and collaboration and small businesses having an agenda outside of pure commercial gain.
There are round tables, exactly. So on skills, infrastructure, productivity, and the fourth one, it'll come back to me. So where you can sit and listen and take part and contribute to these round tables. So you'll hear what other people are doing, because, there's almost information overload, isn't there? We can get it from any of the blogs. We can get it from these radio stations. We can get it from Kent Messenger Business. But there's nothing more powerful than hearing it face to face. So this Kent Business Summit really does put together an absolute cross-section of Kent businesses and decision makers. So you could attend on Friday, take part in a workshop and hear some really fascinating comments in the speaker slots from Bank of England or from Professor Menon, UK in a Changing Europe, which is the think tank. So it's a mixture, and we've very much looked at the previous 2 years and adapted it and tweaked it. We've been flexible, Paul, like you with your business. We've looked at the feedback. There's absolutely some pros and cons, but we've looked at the members' feedback because we got some really interesting and useful comments last year. So
and
we've
the idea
tried
is
to improve
to create
it again.
A working document that comes out of this.
Yeah, we'll see if that is going to carry on again, but it's definitely giving people that face-to-face opportunity to hear and engage, to network. Some people will stand in the queue getting coffees, and it's not a very long queue. Don't let that put you off. They'll be there to sign up in the morning, and they'll bump into somebody that they would not have had that opportunity to meet otherwise. And it will be somebody really senior in a mega business, because all sizes of businesses are invited, and you'll end up getting a contract. And I know for a fact that's happened with somebody. So it's that.
Well, I'm really excited about it on a personal level, because I'm in the process of launching a new business.
Okay.
I've had a new business idea on holiday because, you know,
that's
one of the few times you get to think.
He even brought the sand back with him to do it.
And I'm really interested to hear from Benita, who's going to be talking about sustainability, you know, how we all have a collective responsibility to think more about, you know, the environment in which we operate our business.
Absolutely.
Rather than just the bottom line moving
forward. And I think this is as well where we can't be too inward looking. We know we've got a really active, strong business community in Kent, but what else is happening outside of Kent that we can learn from, that we can benefit from, that we can maybe just take one bit of information back to our own business and improve it or tweak it or launch it in that sense? So I think that was Fluorte as well from University of Kent who's got this link, and we're delighted to have her as a speaker. Equally with Phil Eckersley from Bank of England, looking at the Southeast as a region, how do we compare what might be happening next? Where are we going next? So there'll be a bit of the roundtable workshops that you can book into that you absolutely take part and contribute and learn and listen to see what else is happening in the county. Mm-hmm. But those keynote speaker slots, I think, will be fascinating.
Yes.
So that we can look at where are we as a county in the UK and in the wider world. Mm-hmm. We were talking a bit earlier about productivity levels. How does UK fit in the rest of Europe? Well, how and why are we where we are, mm-hmm. and what could we do individually that will have that kind of collective impact? So mm-hmm. we're looking forward to it. There's still some places left. You can book available. You can just Google it. It's on Eventbrite, the mm-hmm. booking. It should be a really good day. So good. If you're not booked, make sure you're booked.
Good. Paul, are you going?
I certainly am.
Good. You're not. Are you speaking this year? Or
no, I'm not. I chaired one of the roundtables last year on diversity and equality in the workplace. Mm-hmm. I'm really looking forward to it again because I haven't got to work.
Yes, you can absolutely take part.
So I can actually attend some of the roundtables and workshops.
We've got less workshops this year. We had so many last year.
Yeah,
it was like, wow, we needed signposting and traffic.
Yes.
So we've tried to sort of tweak the agenda to make it a little bit more streamlined.
So it starts at 9 o'clock, I think, doesn't it?
Yep.
With your, I think there's lunch included within the price of the ticket. It's 30 quid a ticket.
Yep.
Lunch included. You get a designated parking space as well on the campus, I believe.
Yep.
You get a blue ticket pass, which enables you to park. Assuming it's light, of course, and you can actually see the colour coded car parking system that operates at the university. Park in the blue space to avoid getting a ticket, but that's included as well.
And there should be a few spaces left on some of the workshops. So on the Eventbrite page, if you Google Kent Business Summit, mm-hmm. University of Kent, Friday the 10th of January, mm-hmm. you would come up with that page, and there's different roundtable workshops. You can book your place on that, and it's quite mm-hmm. important you do say which one you want to take part on.
Brilliant.
They've some really super hosts as well, I must add. Mm. So the people who are chairing, Paul is an excellent example from last year, I'm afraid. Mm. But this year as well, we've tried to make it some of those decision makers will be chairing those roundtables. So they are looking you in the eye, hearing directly what you think about the state of the skills in the Kent economy mm-hmm. or productivity or infrastructure. Uh-huh.
So rather than sitting at your desk having a moan, get out there and let your voice be heard.
An amazing networking opportunity.
Absolutely. I was just about to say there's a huge attendance. There's a few hundred people there last year. And there is lots of influencers. It's a place really worth going.
Right.
You know, one of the things I really liked about it was this mixture of the regional government, local government, national government, academics and the business community. Mm. And how one of the refreshing things is how so many people that you didn't think do actually understand what some of the issues are. Mm. They're just a bit stymied as to how to do anything about it.
But it can be reassuring in that sense. That
exactly,
you think, is anyone doing something about it? And you find out actually there is a plan and it's in action.
Good. Yeah.
So
good. Yeah. We'll move on from there. We'll look forward to seeing everybody there on Friday on the university campus. But moving on from there, and I know something that's very close to Tracy's heart, and Tracy has just become, by the way, a fellow of the Chartered Institute of Credit Management.
Yes.
So congratulations to you, Tracy.
Thank you very much.
And that really means that Tracy is an expert on all things credit management and crucially cash flow.
Mm.
And I know late payments is a drum that the FSB continually bang on behalf of small businesses as well.
I think we won a PR award for it last year, actually.
So tell me, because I think, you know, where perhaps businesses struggle in terms of, do I want to be a member of the FSB? Do I want to be a member of the Chamber of Commerce? Do I want to be a member of the IOD? There are lots, in other words, of membership organisations out there.
There are.
But I think what you do is you have some very specific, some very tangible business benefit products and services, if you like, that you can kind of bring to the table.
Yeah.
One of which is the late payment service.
It's a debt recovery service,
right.
Exactly. And I was talking to a colleague this morning about it. It's the second most popular, if you like, amongst our benefits. And I think that's partly because if you're a small business, you've probably got pretty good relationships with your suppliers, whether that's your direct client or whoever you're buying your goods and stuff from. So if suddenly they're not paying you on time, how are you going to look them in the eye and said, well, I've sent you however many emails, or my accountant's done X, Y, and Z? So what the debt recovery service is, almost that that little buffer zone. Mm-hmm. It'll keep that relationship nice and secure. Mm-hmm. And it just means you log on to your FSB website and you download whatever letter you need, whatever email content. And it's got all the bona fide wording in it. It's all the legal jargon that you might not have as a small business owner because you're too busy running your own business.
Right.
But it means that's all part of the package, and it helps you get that payment through without affecting your relationship. Okay. So it's one of the, it's part of the membership. So, so if someone hasn't paid you yet, get one of those letters.
How am I going to ring Stan up and have a moan about the fact he hasn't paid me? I'm not going to be able to pick up the phone and have that conversation.
So what you can do is you can say, Stan, watch out, there's a letter coming. I've had to send it. Yes. Sorry, mate, because it's in my terms and conditions.
Okay. And,
you send off this letter, and he'll know that it's not in exactly your language. Do you see what I mean? Because it's that technical language. Does that make sense, Tracy?
Most definitely.
He's fibbing.
I mean,
he's fibbing.
Who's Stan? Have I got Stan in trouble?
No, he rang me up last year and he went, you haven't paid your bill this year. When are you going to pay it?
And you should have paid it, Paul.
It's a tricky topic. And the British don't like, we don't like talking about money, really,
no,
do we?
No.
We'd like to have it, but we don't like talking about it.
Well, it must be, Tracy, I mean, in your experience, that not being frightened to pick up the phone and ask somebody to pay you for the job you've done for them.
Well, this is it, you know.
It's got to be one of the kind of the biggest stumbling blocks for small business owners,
isn't it? The thing is that you're right, Alison. You know, we seem to have this thing where we don't like asking for money. Mm. And we should do. I mean, at the end of the day, you do a job. You've got to look about how you got to where you are to be able to do the job. If you've delivered the job to the satisfaction of the request of the customer, then you should be paid for it.
Why should you feel embarrassed to ask for that
money? This is the thing. And I think a lot of people feel that, well, if I ask them to pay for the things that I've done, they won't come back and use my service.
They won't use me again. If they have to pay me for what I've just done for them.
But quite frankly,
it can be backup help. It can be that debt recovery in particular can be, you might have a very good relationship and for one reason or another that payment hasn't come through. You need to chase it and you need to get it sharp.
But also for what the FSB do is absolutely fantastic. And plus they really know that a lot of SMEs do have the big issue of being paid late. Mm-hmm. But it's also having the understanding before you get to that stage is about getting things right, getting your processes right in the first instance. Are you trading with the right people? And this is a thing that, you know, my business really tries to pin other businesses down. Mm. Talk about your cash flow. Mm. It's not a taboo subject. Mm. Every single business has had a problem with cash flow at some point. Mm. It is not unique to your business. Everybody has.
You're right.
And if you have done a job and you've done it to the best of your ability to what your clients and customers have asked for, then they should pay you. Mm. Don't walk into a supermarket and say, I want that loaf of bread, I'll pay you next week. Yeah. Mm. Will that supermarket let you walk out with it? No, they won't.
But a lot of businesses out there, and I used to work in a business that where the customers had this attitude. You know, we had a terrible sort of age debtor book, and it was sort of 45 days plus. In a lot of instances, it was 60 days plus. And I'd go out and see the customers, and I'd say, why haven't you paid your invoices? And they'd say, because you haven't asked us.
Exactly. Yeah.
Oh. You know, a lot of businesses out there think they don't have to pay you until you chase them.
Yeah, they won't pay until I get a red one.
Right.
Well, this
and
is
then,
it. This
and then
is
you
it.
Get the
yeah.
business owner thinking, oh, I can't chase them because if I chase them, they won't want to do business with me. Yeah. And they're sitting on the other end of it thinking, crikey, he hasn't chased me for money yet.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, the thing that the FSB supply with that is that you have to do some of this legwork before you throw it over to somebody else because it is your client, it is your customer. And the thing is there's only two reasons why somebody won't pay. It's because they never got good customer service and you did the job wrong. Mm. That's the only bona fide reasons. Would you pay for something if you didn't get good service or they messed something up?
Mm.
No, you wouldn't. So why would you expect your customers to do the same thing? And it is having that understanding. And I think that, you know, my mantra last year was to rid the taboo of cash flow. Mm. My mantra this year is if you've done the job well and you've done it to the spec of your customers, then ask to get paid.
Mm. You must always ask. Don't make the mistake of sending an invoice and thinking you're going to get paid. No. You must always follow that up with a, and I want to be paid
by the way. Mm. Yeah.
So that's one of the kind of services you offer.
Well, and some of it obviously works. That's one of the benefits. The legal helpline is really top popular slot.
Employment as well?
Employment law. You get a lot of advice. Yep, absolutely. And tax investigation insurance.
This is huge.
Thousands of pounds.
How many businesses are out there that have gone through a VAT investigation is sometimes the wrong word, but, you know, systematically and periodically, HMRC will decide we're having a VAT purge.
Yeah. Yep.
And they'll come to your business and they'll knock on the door and they'll say, we want to see the books.
Yep. Mm-hmm. And even accountants will recommend this benefit as well. Because
and that's going to cost
money.
Time and money, isn't it? Because your accountant is then going to charge you.
Yep.
For, you know, for liaising with HMRC on your behalf to demonstrate that actually you haven't been fiddling your VAT return.
And it must work because, as I heard this morning, in Kent and Medway, we've got 86.4% retention of our membership, which I'm delighted with. That's in the UK for FSB, that's as high as... in Scotland, 90% retention. So if you join FSB, you use one of the services,
leave.
You're like, I'm going to keep that because it was really handy. Yeah.
Right.
And we figure...
Because it pays for itself. I mean, how much
if you just,
for a single person business,
it's barely anything.
Membership of the FSB is, what, 140, 150 quid a year?
Yeah, it starts at that for a year.
Right.
So you could use one of the benefits and you kind of paid for your membership.
More than.
Yeah. Then. Yeah, exactly. So once people have joined, they kind of go, actually, it's really handy, and they stick around, which is good.
I just want to very quickly pay testament to Alison, Deborah Turner and David Billam, because if it wasn't for those three, Kent wouldn't have the profile in the FSB that it does.
Oh, thank you,
Paul.
Well,
they're the ones that really pull this together and make it happen in Kent. And that's why... membership retention is so high as it is because of the team that run Kent.
And now I can say we've got about a team of about 20, really. Deborah, and so this is the volunteer aspect of it, Martin. About 20 other people who run local events and who support us. Paul does all the Skills 30-30 workshops, but it's those volunteers who
get
drive
yourself
it.
Along to an FSB event. Meet the FSB. A lot of these events, you don't have to be a member to come along, like the summit on Friday. Come along, meet the FSB, see the value in action and join up, I think would be the kind of key message. We've run out of time. I cannot believe it. We are at 2 minutes before we're going to be shut off completely. Thank you so much to all our guests today,
Martin.
In the studio.
Yes,
it's been absolutely wonderful. Our first show back in the new year. We'll be back in 2 weeks' time.
Yes.
And we'll be back with Paul Andrews at some point in the near future as well for part two of jobsinkent.com.
And three and four.
And three and four. But for now,
it's longer than a trilogy.
Thank you so much for listening. And it's goodbye from us.
Goodbye.
Bye.
Bye. Thanks. Bye. Channel 2.